But opening the show up, I'm really glad that I am getting the chance to bring this to you because it's about a play that I saw a little while ago, and the play was written by Tanya Wispar, and we're going to be featuring Tanya and one of the main actors in the play, Laura Liguori, and they joined us to talk about Wispar's play, The Red Dress, which is set in Berlin, and it's based on a true story. It's a romantic drama that explores the intersection of politics and art during the years between World War I and the rise of fascism. And it poses right there. It stops right about 1938 and challenges you with what you're going to do. So without any further ado, let's jump into that. I recently saw a play that I've been thinking about and talking about ever since. And it was one of the most powerful plays I've seen so far this year. It was about something that I think everybody should be thinking about. And as we'll talk about towards the end of this interview, that I think you really got to get it spread out around the country, okay?
Because thank you. It's that important. I would love to.
It's that important. And joining me now to talk about this is the playwright of that play, and her name is Tanya Wispar. And one of the, the lead actor, I think, in the play. And her name is Laura Liguori. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
It's really
thank
a pleasure
you.
To have you. I'm going to jump right into this because there's so much to talk about, all right? And maybe what we'll do is we'll start with you, Tanya. Describe the play.
The Red Dress is about... It actually started with a question which I had very, very young because I grew up in Germany. I was born in Germany. And because I didn't know very much about my family because my mother, who was a single parent at that time, really never talked about the past and never talked about that she'd been married to a very prominent German film director, my father, Frank Wispar, and he had used her connections when she was in Germany. She grew up in a prominent German film family, and through her he became a very prominent and well-known German film director, and then the Nazis came to power, and he made films for the Nazis, and my mother was Jewish, and she was followed by the Gestapo all the time, pressuring her to divorce him and to leave. And she didn't do that. And actually, she stood up and fought the Nazis through radio and her own public image, which was a pretty strong one. The question that started the play was really, how does a civilized country, small incremental steps at a time, begin to accept the notion that other people are not equal, have no rights, and can ultimately be murdered, slaughtered by the millions? So that was the question. So I began to look at the one period that people don't really look at very seriously, and it is the most serious part of that century, is what set up World War II and the Holocaust and the Nazis. So the play is time framed between 1924, the end of World War I, and as Hitler comes to power. But the play stops at 1936 because I did not want this to be a Holocaust play, but I wanted it very much to focus on what causes the loss of democracy. And we're watching that, I hate to say it, in the United States, it's now a question. Step by step by step, are we losing our way altogether, or can we redeem ourselves and our reverence for democratic principles where we are all equal?
Mm-hmm. Now, one more question here, because actually, as I understand it, before you did this play, there was something that happened in relation to you discovering some material that your mother had written that actually sort of turned on like big lights in your head, right?
Yes, it was an absolute shock because my sister and I, she's 2 years older than I am, and we had pretty well grown up without much of a history. We didn't know that our mother was Jewish. We didn't have any religious background. We didn't have any network that we belonged to. And in 1999, I was living in Los Angeles, and I got a Sunday morning call. It was a very heavy male German voice at the other end saying, "Are you Tanya Wispar?" And I said, "Yes," not too happily because I have gotten some weird calls over the years. And he said, "I'm a German research professor, and I'm now at Harvard University Library basement, and I just found an 88-page manuscript your mother wrote in 1939. And this was in 1999, so it had been there 60 years, and my mother had passed away by then, and he said, would you like me to fly out and bring it to you? And I said, yes. I wasn't absolutely sure what was next. So he did come, and he brought the manuscript, and it answered every question I had ever had about my parents, the erosion of their marriage due to the Nazification of the German film industry, which my father for a while worked making films for the Nazis. That was just a huge blow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine. Is that why it took you so long to decide to make the play? Because you also said that people would bug you about it, and you'd say, yeah, we'll talk about it later, and then 15 years later, you make the film.
Actually, the only person ever bugged me was Jonathan Sanger, because he was my partner on Birthday Present 2050, which is a cheerless dystopian play instead of The Red Dress, which is a romantic story set against the rise of a tyranny. But I did read it finally, the manuscript, and it was fortunately in German, which I don't read that well. So it was a little bit of a buffer. I couldn't read it all, so I didn't have to take it all in. I could hide a little bit from what it was revealing. And I knew I would have to write about it at some point. So I did think about it. I just happened to think about it for 15 years. And then I realized I really had to write it. So, but I had to get ready psychologically. And the odd thing is that it did such emotional damage, even though I thought I'd thought about it enough. But I hadn't. There's no way to write about so tragic a period in history and your own family. You think you know your family? Well, if you write about them or start to, you will find out you don't know your family at all. It's just a shock. So instead of trying to adapt my mother, Eva Wisbar, and Frank Wisbar, I used them to derive the character of Alexandra Schiele and Franz Weitrek. And I was very lucky in the casting of Laura as Alexandra, because I think she's just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And now we'll jump over to Laura, because I have to agree, I was just mesmerized by your performance in the play. I thought it was really remarkable. And it's a hard one, because when you go into the play and you're thinking, okay, now I'm watching this play about this Nazi that gets married to this woman, but you're sort of like, where do I go with this? And I thought you brought home something that was really important. You brought home a lot of the humanity in the play, which was from the very moment that you step onto the stage and the interaction you have with the various people in the, you know, at that point, and then all the way through, I thought you brought a lot of really necessary humanity into it. So,
thank you.
Cool. Yeah, sure. Now, why did you do that? No. You can speak to what you want there.
It helps that my character is based on Tanya's mother, so it's a real person. So I derive a lot of my choices from the strength that I can feel from what her mother had to actually go through and up against and fight for. And people who are strong like that tend to have huge hearts, and strength really comes from love. So there's an aspect of my character that is incredibly loving and, you know, wants to have a family despite all of this around her, wants to create life even though, you know, things are falling apart.
Yeah, it's important. But there's something here that really got me, too, which is that you were very good at carrying out, and you were very good in writing it. There's something there that thematically it was very important to play, because the time seems so normal. We have the advantage of being out of that history, way back from it, and we can look back. But even doing that, you're sitting there, and you're going, and you're, okay, I know the Nazis, I know what they meant in the world, they did all this other stuff. But when you present it the way it's presented, and it's actually so normal. Like, your character is very normal in the relationship with the man and what she's carrying out in her life, her career, and everything else. It's really normal. And yet, what you've done is that this is, as setting it the way you've done it, is everybody knows that the background is the Nazis are gearing up to do terrible things in the world. So I thought that was really important, the way that you played that, too. It was very, very sort of systematically normal.
I think it was absolutely a challenge for me as the playwright to make it all look normal, because if you weren't the target of hatred, for you, you could still live a perfectly normal life. And of course, the German people did continue to live a normal life until, in my mother's manuscript, there's a wonderful line. She said they built a fence through which no Jew could get at the end. But it turned out they were all imprisoned inside their own fence. Because all the passports were taken away from military age boys and men. When Hitler first came to power, he had a Hitler Youth movement, we all know that, and the German boys were allowed to go to Switzerland and to Austria and all that. But as the Nazis totally controlled what happened to the children, they were no longer allowed out except in uniform. So normalcy does not belong in any country where war is being created or hatred is given room to grow. And we're watching that here, and I think we are all quite terrified. But we're still going around normally and going to shop, right? And we're driving our cars and we're complaining about the traffic in Los Angeles. But it doesn't mean that we are safe. We're just not safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very important point. I was thinking about that very deeply after seeing the play and then reading some stuff around it, too. And one thing I'd ask you, Laura, there's a point in the play where you're confronting your husband, and it's clear that there's been this crackdown. There's been things, it's sort of the way that fascism develops. They do something hard, and then they back up a little bit. They let people get used to it. Then they do something hard again. And something had just happened, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but the two of you were in a room, maybe the bedroom or something, and there's a point where he's telling you, you have to wear this dress, you have to do this, you have to do that. But he makes a comment about some grouping of people that was clearly Nazi rhetoric. And you had this look on your face, and I don't know whether you wrote it this way or you just did it this way, because it was brilliant no matter what way you did it. But you had this look that was like, just you stopped, and it was just sort of this quizzical but also very horrified look on your face about you, because there was a, it seemed like there was a realization of your husband was like going in a really wrong direction. Let's talk about that a little.
Well, there are many moments that I feel that that actually happens in the play, and it happens more and more every performance. I notice that this underlying current is there sooner and sooner, you know, each performance for me, because I guess I'm just picking up on little things that even the actor, J.B. Waterman, is doing that makes me very uncomfortable, the character uncomfortable on stage. But in one specific part, when he asked me to help him with his tie, and in the mirror reflection, I see that his bow tie has the swastikas on it. And it's horrible. It's, my character fell in love with a man that she believed was her soulmate, and she watches him basically sell out his own core beliefs so that he can make films. And so, yeah, it's devastating, that part.
It's really interesting because a book on my father's coming out next month, which hundreds and hundreds of articles about Frank Wisbar. And as a parent, he was just absent and otherwise cold. That was my only knowledge of him, except when Fireside Theater started, there was only one hardware store in Alexandria, Virginia that had a TV set. So Tuesday nights, my sister and I could go stand there and people would say, "Oh, it must be so nice that that's your father." And I thought, what a horrible, horrible life. I didn't think I had a horrible life, but I thought, how sad. But I didn't miss him. I just realized there was this considerable absence, and people would say, "Gee, he's famous. You're so lucky." And that wasn't true. So writing the play, and particularly the character of her husband, Franz, that was such a challenge because I really patterned it after my father, and he did make films before the Nazis in Germany, during the Nazis, and then after he had made it to the United States. Not as a refugee as we came, my mother and sister and I, we were refugees. He wasn't. He just came, and then it turned out the U.S. Senate wanted to hear his opinion about starting a glider program for the United States Air Force. But when I first wrote him, he was so horrible. I realized nobody in the audience would sit still for that, so I had to really work to find him redemption. And I do, but then I was no longer using him as my role model either. And that is really what allowed the play to finally get finished. If I hadn't had his real history as a glider pilot in the German First World War, I couldn't have found any way to end that play. So I was very grateful.
Yeah, definitely. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with playwright Tanya Wisbar and actor Laura Ligori. And Tanya is the author of the play The Red Dress, and Laura is the main actor in the play, and it's a play not to be missed, all right? One thing that got me, too, though, is that just listening to what you're saying, it's also true, though, that when you're looking at him as you're going through and you're seeing things develop, it has a lot to do with what you're talking about, why you position that, the play, between those years. Because there was that time where even with him, he had a chance to do differently, and he didn't, in a certain sense. And the actor personifies bored middle-class boredom. And I was using bored both ways. No, I don't mean the actor in terms of him as a person, but the fact that it was just sort of like, I'm doing my job, this is what it requires, and I want you as my wife to come along and do what's required, and we're just going to have our life. And it was like that period, because that period between the early years of the 30s and the late years of the 30s was a period where, as we were saying, all this stuff was going on, but all the people were seeing stuff, and, well, my neighbor's gone, I guess they moved. I've read books more recently that tell about whole neighborhoods being driven out and being put on buses and trains, and and that people would then go and loot the apartments, the empty apartments. They would take the apartments or they'd go and see, go through. It was like a big sale day because they could just go and pick out what the Jewish people who had been removed left behind. You know, and there's that normalcy that actually really comes through in the entire relationship until you make that snap look like, what? What the hell are you talking about? Which I think is really important, the way it's carried out like that, because you got the audience right there and everybody's starting to question, but then bam, and it doesn't come until you get that look that sort of says, okay, now some stuff is going to start going.
We've been really, I think, incredibly fortunate with the reviews we've gotten. I mean, they are far beyond anything I would have anticipated. On the other hand, I'm not a great anticipator, so, you know. But I think the normalcy is, I'll give you an anecdote of how creepy it gets, and not necessarily in the play, but it's part of the stuff around it. In 1999, after this manuscript was found, and I went to Germany, my husband was still alive at the time, and we went to the economic minister in Berlin to find out what had happened to my mother's 26 suitcases. And I knew that only because I think I had read it in something she had once written, not this document. But the economic minister, who was just a lovely young woman, she said, well, we found out what happened. And, you know, your mother, we billed your mother, we being the Nazis, and she wasn't one. This is after the fall of the wall. We kept a small account for her in the bank, and we put all her stuff so those who were bombed out could have clothes. So we put all the Jewish suitcases on whatever street was still existing without a bunch of rubble, and people would go through the suitcases. I mean, the Nazis had taken everything of value, the carpets and the jewelry and all that was gone. But there were clothes. In our case, there were baby diapers and crayons and, you know, pathetic stuff. Mm-hmm. And she gave me the entire list of the contents of 26 suitcases, and she said, oh, there was like 200 marks for your mother built during that period, and it was like 5 pfennig at a time for a dress. And I was just so appalled. So I've always said, I wish I could have one spoon that belonged to my mother, because I can read in 26 pages, I can read everything that was in those suitcases. Mm-hmm. So the Nazis were so tidy, they wanted to make sure, in case the Jews ever showed up again, they would at least have 200 mark or pfennig or pennies in a bank account.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Wow.
All sorts of, the 3 years of research were really very worth it, and probably ruined my mind forever.
Your mind seems pretty damn good to me, okay? So, didn't ruin you, sort of. But here's the thing. We only have a couple more questions left. But you know, part of what you were just saying and your response of, wow, it's sort of what got me, too, because what you've done in this, where there's the future gets decided, the future for the people in the play gets decided on a real level. The wife is, you know, she knows what's going to happen to her. The husband knows what he's done and where he's going. And the audience is, like, really upset about a lot of the stuff. But there's a moment where an ideological question is posed, and I thought it was so great. And we won't say what is done, but it involves a very dramatic move by you, Laura.
Yeah.
I was going to say, by you, Laura. A very dramatic move that ideologically really sets things very, very importantly for people. It sets something for people to think about. And if you didn't leave the theater thinking about that moment and what difference it made, it would be really difficult. And it's the moment when you actually basically decide to lay bare what, you know, what's there. And it was sort of, it was too much, you know. And you could have written a character and it, you know, as one that would say, okay, I'll just like try to get by, I'll try to sneak by, I'll try to, you know, get myself and get the kids out of the country and do all this other stuff. But there had to be this moment where in the face of terrible inhumanity, that one person had to stand up and do one thing, even if it was in a small room where this Goebbels-like character and your husband were there. It was making a stand that was important for all of humanity, and I think important for people to learn about today. So,
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Yes. I think that it's really important that people use their voice. And I have always wondered, ever since I was a little girl, I've been really affected by the Holocaust. And I wondered how does this happen? How does it get to a point where you are killing children? You're murdering children. You're asking them to sing as you take them into a gas chamber. How does this even occur? And a few years ago, I worked for a not-so-nice woman. And I witnessed something happen. An individual, an elderly woman, crashed into her wall in Bel Air. And I watched my employer and other wealthy neighbors around looking at the crack, the hairline crack on the wall, talking about whose property it was on and insurance things, as this poor woman died. Mm. And it was then that I realized this is how it happens. The first thing is when you literally just worry about your own self, how everything just affects you to the point where it's all about money and greed and selfishness and your world is about protecting your little bubble. Meanwhile, like the human beings around you that are suffering, you care not because it's not you. And that's the beginning of how I think it happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the whole point, really, of placing this play exactly between the end of one war and as another one is being planned. So people can keep asking the question, what is the slow slide? And it's not abrupt. It is very slow. It's giving up one right for everybody else at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly, I mean, that's why I didn't let the play go into the Holocaust, because we know that story. We've seen that story. We think we understand it, but frankly, we'll never understand it. There is evil that you can't understand, and certainly the children. And I grew up with those images, and that's probably why I have a school for developmentally disabled children, and why this play was so important, ultimately.
Yeah, definitely. And that gets to the last question I was going to ask you, so we've already spoken to it, but it was exactly that point of, there's a point where you're confronted with this horror, and you do have to do something. You do have to say or do something, and you remind people, and there was something I read that you wrote, you remind people that it doesn't happen in a day. It happens over a period of time, and an advancing willingness of people to turn their face away and to believe that it's not really happening or not even care that it's happening. And that's the big thing, because, and why I really liked you having it in that time period, because everyone knows historically what happened. But what if the person who, your character, Laura, what if the person that you had written, Tanya, imagine if that person, if there had been millions of those people doing what that person did, and things would have been different. And we're confronted with something very, very similar to this today. And
yes,
it's frightening and concerning, and we really got to do something about it. So it's
what we do that remains the question.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Exactly. Yeah. It's also, I really would like to see people just like call you up and say, yo, I really want to do this thing.
Oh, I would be so grateful. I would be happy.
How would they reach you?
Email would be better.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's www.hizzie@aol.com.
All right, great. That works really good. Thank you both very much. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with playwright Tanya Wisbar and actor Laura Liguori. And we've been talking about Tanya's play, The Red Dress.